Brought to you by Penguin.
The Tollgate by Georgette Heyer, read by Callum Hughes. Chapter 1. The 6th Earl of Saltash glanced round the immense dining table and was conscious of a glow of satisfaction. It was an emotion not shared by his butler or by his steward, each of whom had served the 5th Earl and remembered with a wealth of nostalgic detail the various occasions upon which the state dining room had been used to entertain royalty, foreign ambassadors, and ton parties of great size and brilliance. The 5th Earl had been a public man. It was otherwise with his son, who had neither the desire nor the ability to fill a great office. Indeed, so little expectation had he of entertaining even the most undistinguished scion of a royal house that the state apartments at Easterby might have fallen into total disuse had he not, at the age of 30, become betrothed to the Lady Charlotte Carne. This, since he was the sole surviving son of the 5th Earl, he could not but consider to be a matter of considerable family importance, and to mark it he had summoned to Easterby to meet his prospective bride every available member of the House of Staple. A rapid review of his maternal relations had been enough to convince him that their presence at this triumphant gathering would be as unnecessary as it was undesirable. To the Staples, he was a person of consequence, the head of his family, and not even his masterful sister Albinia would withhold from him, in public, the respect to which his position entitled him. It was otherwise with the Timbercombes, owing him no allegiance, and it did not take him more than a few reflective minutes to decide that his marriage did not concern them. So 20 persons only sat down to dinner under the painted ceiling in the state dining room, and the Earl, seated at the head of a table loaded with plate and bearing as a centrepiece an enormous epergne presented by some foreign potentate to the 5th Earl, looked around him with satisfaction. It mattered nothing to him that the room was over-large for the company, and that the gentlemen outnumbered the ladies by 2. The Staples had responded in the most gratifying way to his invitation, and were behaving, even his formidable Aunt Caroline, just as they ought. He could see that Lady Melksham, his future mother-in-law, was impressed. With most of the Staples, she was already acquainted, but she had not until today met his Uncle Trevor, the Archdeacon, who was seated beside her, or his huge cousin John. His unmarried aunt, Maria, who kept house for him, had suffered a little qualm about John's lowlier position at the dining table, but she had yielded to the Earl's wish. She knew, of course, that an archdeacon must take precedence over a retired captain of dragoon guards, but the archdeacon was her younger brother, and it was difficult for her to realise that he had any particular standing in the world. John, on the other hand, was the only son of her second brother, and heir presumptive to the earldom, which made him, in her eyes, a person of consequence. She ventured to say as much to the Earl, and he was not displeased. He felt it to be a very just observation. "However, I dare say dear John won't care where he sits," had added Lady Maria, comfortably. The Earl felt that this was regrettably true. He was very fond of John, but he thought him far too careless of his dignity. Probably his years of campaigning in the peninsula had made him forgetful of what was due to himself and the name he bore. His manners were easy to a fault, and he very often behaved in a freakish way which seriously shocked his noble relative. His exploits in the peninsula had made him a byword amongst his fellow officers, and one at least of his actions since he had sold out in 1814 had seemed to the Earl unbecomingly whimsical. No sooner did he learn that Napoleon was again at large than he returned to the army as a volunteer, and when the Earl had shown him that duty did not demand such a sacrifice of his dignity, he had burst out laughing and had exclaimed, "Oh, Beavis, Beavis! You don't suppose I'd miss this campaign, do you? I wouldn't, for a fortune! Duty be hanged!" So off had gone John to the wars again. But he had not remained for long in the humble position of a volunteer. Colonel Clifton, commanding the 1st Regiment of Dragoons, no sooner heard that Crazy Jack...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?